Burn that rubber like I'm Michelin. Five star food that I dish to them. Chef sat on when I whip in the kitchen, and I switch suits like I'm Mr. Ben.
10-10 gear, I shift up to fifth. Blues in the rear and I'm swerving the mains like Tokyo Drift. Took a shot, but he missed. Then made love to the grin and kissed
the curb. What's the word? I dodge your case, so I flip the bird. Grab the bin, get back to work. Then I'm switching lanes and I flex out
hurt. I'll hurt him. One thing's for sure and two things for certain. When he gets made and the pecs, I'm serving him. Mess with a cake and I bet him a burger.
Welcome, everyone, to the Wobble Fraggy Doo podcast. I am your host, Olu Jimmy, joined today by the return of Mr. Francis.
Gang is back. The gang is back.
And the man who loves to introduce himself.
A maestro, a.k.a. what's the king to a god. A new season awaits. Full of revelations. Nostradamus is in the house. Continue, let it begin.
There's the relentlessness for me, like, you know, you keep topping it every time. But anyways. Welcome back, guys. Francis, welcome back to the pod. We've missed you, man. How was your summer? Have you been?
I know, man. I missed you guys too, but you know, life was happening while you know what we figured to do was ongoing. But I'm glad to be back. It's been a tough negotiation period in the background, but I'm glad we finally came to an agreement, and I'm here.
were you outside at all this summer?
Outside? I left the country once or twice, but didn't really do much, man. Had some personal stuff going on in the background, so had to focus on that.
Fair enough. Football is well. All is good. Oh my,
everything is great. Everything is great. Life is good.
Inshallah. Oh, Maestro, how was the last couple of weeks? Because I think the last pod we did was like 2 or 3 weeks ago. Time flies, eh?
Yeah, I think like two, at least two. I think I was still in Houston when we did that pod, so. It's been a great summer, man. You know, like I said, you know, Maestro is thriving. I'm doing good. You know, I've been helping my brother out. So obviously, he needed a shoulder to cry on, to lean on. You know, in a time of absence, you know, helping my brothers out. You know, am I my brother's keeper, motherfucker? Yes, I am. You know, so, yeah, just living, man. I'm going to sit out in the sun in a second, you know, catch some sun. You know, just chilling. Ready for the new season, feeling great, feeling, you know, I feel optimistic. Optimistic is not even the right word because that's a state of mind. I feel conviction. You know, I feel strongly about the way the season is going to play out, and that's going to be reflected in some of the conversations that we're going to have. It'll be interesting to see what energy you guys are on, though. You know, you guys have had a summer to recoup. Obviously, a bunch of niggas were jaded at the end of last season. Let's see if they come with that same energy, that lukewarm energy, you know?
That was funny. I missed that much.
Speaking of good summer, United made a couple of signings this summer, three in total. Started off with Mason Mount from Chelsea, then Onana from Inter.
Then
this week that just went by, Haaland, our new striker. Even though we bought him with a...
How do you pronounce his name, Jimmy?
I just call it Haaland.
The D Haaland. Silent.
Oh, Haaland. Okay.
Yeah. Haaland. Haaland.
Haaland. But, Francis, we haven't really actually gotten your thoughts on any of our actually new signings. So, you know, the floor is yours. I guess we can start off with Mount. Like, what are your thoughts on Mount, and then you can move to Onana, and then, you know, and then talk about, and then we could probably all just talk about Haaland.
Mount.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think I've expressed.
Yeah, my nigga was thinking about something nice to say.
No, it's not really. I mean, to be honest, like Mount is not a bad player, but is Mount what we need? I think we'll find out. And in the background, I know we've all been having conversations around Mount and what he brings to the team, or what he will bring to the team, and why ETH, you know, ended up going for him as opposed to a traditional number eight, that kind of thing. And I was a little bit hesitant to his signing at the very beginning, but I've done a bit of research and soul searching, you would say, on how ETH wants to play. Initially, I was going on this whole premise of wanting to be like a city from a gameplay standpoint. But, you know, with recent comments, I think in the past 2 weeks or 3 weeks with ETH talking about how he wants us to be one of the best transition teams in the world and whatnot, I'm beginning to see reasons why he went for Mount as opposed to a traditional number eight. With that being said, I think we still need a traditional number eight, but I can see the benefits that, or the potential benefits Mount is going to bring to the team. Just surrounding, when you speak of transition, you're talking about number one, energy, being quick on the ball, being smart and being decisive, and all those revolve around being able to win the ball, you know, from the opposition team at a particular section of the field within a given time frame. And if you cannot do it, being quick enough to drop back, hold your shape till you're able to collect the ball, and then you can quickly break the lines again. And I think knowing Mount's qualities, he has some of that in relation to being a very good person at the ball, having the energy, having the quickness of mind to be able to decide what he wants to do immediately. The one thing I don't know if Mount has is the ability to control the game. But in terms of how we want to play, I don't know if he'll be required to do that. But if that's what we're sticking to, I think Mount still has a lot to learn, or a lot to prove in relation to being able to hold the ball, control the game, and then, you know, pick the right pass. So that's where I have a little bit of reservations. I watched him in preseason, and to be honest, he didn't really do much. He didn't impress me. He didn't wow me in any way. But going back to some of the highlights, I could see his off the ball movement. And I think that is what ETH is probably asking him to do. So before, like 2 weeks ago, I was really not sold on the signing. But right now I'm being open to being sold on the signing. Like, let's see what you can do. And let's see if you would fit in this new style of play that ETH, you know, openly talked about here in the past couple weeks.
I think that's a fair assessment. You know, you're waiting to see like if it can actually provide what the idea, what you think ETH brought him for in the Premier League. Well, we have our first game shortly, so I guess we'll see how he performs. What about your thoughts on Onana? Guy. Our inverted goalie.
Yeah, I mean, before I speak on Onana, I would speak on De Gea and losing De Gea. I think going in the direction that we want to be in, or where we want to be at, I think it was very important to, first of all, removing De Gea from that team, either by totally removing him from the team or him playing second fiddle. The one thing I would say is, I like the end result, but I don't like how we got there. I like that De Gea is out of Manchester United, but I don't like how, you know, the whole contract negotiation and whatnot played out. I think
so. Basically, deserved... you don't like the fact that his contract got pulled last minute. Is what you're saying?
No, I mean, yeah, I don't like the how. I like the end goal, right?
Okay.
I don't like that he was, you know, maybe led on from point A to point Z and then up onto point Z. No one kind of knew where he was going to be at. And all of a sudden, they let the contract go down and then, you know, ended up buying someone else. I think De Gea deserves a little bit more respect with what he had.
When you say, because I feel like up until the last game of the season, which was the FA Cup, ETH had kind of defended him, had said, you know, I want to keep him. And I imagine that when you're ETH, you're looking at, okay, this is how much I'm going to have available for the season. This is where I want to spend my money. Maybe I want to spend $100 million on Kane, for example, or $120 million on Kane. And so you are constantly making decisions about what the most important thing to you is. I don't feel like, I don't know if we talked about this on the pod or maybe it was off the pod, where it was like, after that FA Cup final, I'm like, there's no way we can renew this guy's contract. There's no way we can renew this guy's contract. And for me, that was the feeling I got, even listening to ETH after the game. If you remember, that was the first time he came out and said, like, we need improvement in these positions and everybody's going to have to step up. Up until that point, he had been talking, even for Maguire, I think he said something similar too, right? It was... So, I guess, I don't know, like, I feel like they might have... Because if you remember, we made an offer to De Gea in the middle of the season, or not middle, like January, February, and he actually rejected the contract offer that we made.
So, now that's the thing. There are conflicting news about what happened in the background and whatnot. I've read people say there was an agreement between De Gea and Manchester United, and then they had both signed, but I think maybe they were waiting for a final signature, but then ETH pulled that back and said he was going to cut his salary even by half if he was going to be a second keeper. And then went back to De Gea, and De Gea said, no, he's not signing that because, you know, that was not what they agreed to before. Then there was another conversation about, okay, this is the contract De Gea signed, and ETH was not going to sign because he was still trying to play it out. Long story short, I don't know what happened in background. I'm not privy to all those conversations, but with the story that was coming out then, if that's the reality, then I just don't think it should have happened that way. I think there should have been more honest conversations of, okay, we do not want you anymore, then this guy goes.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is, like, that conversation about when we don't want you anymore, like, we had always been talking about, why are we even renewing this guy, even for one more year or two more years, whatever. Why are we? And then maybe you do get to that point as a squad, when I say squad, as a leadership, whether that's ETH, whether that's the, you know, the technical people, where they now say, okay, you know what, maybe we should actually, you know, take a second look at whether or not we want to renew this guy. I don't feel like you can look at De Gea's performances towards the end of the season and not take that into account. Right? Like, if in every competition that we went out of, so like you think of the Sevilla game, it was one of his worst games of the season, right? You think of the FA Cup final, like, these are big moments. And then you now juxtapose that to, like, in that same week we lost the FA Cup, you go and watch Man City play against Inter Milan, and it's like, wow. Like, the difference is so clear that I just felt like, I don't know when they made that decision, but for me, I don't feel like De Gea was ever in a position where he felt like he could say he earned a new contract based on his performances. And so, to me, it's like, you can say that you're being unfair to somebody when they've earned it. Like, if somebody is actually playing the way they're supposed to play, and then you're telling them at the end of it, like, man, we still don't want you, we're going to upgrade your position, maybe you can. But I don't feel like De Gea, like, really ever, and after that contract he signed, I feel like he's been on the slide for, like, years. So where
no, I mean, was that one? I agree with all of that, but I think the bottom line here is, at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, till today, Man U has not announced that De Gea has left United, right? De Gea has been...
I think we have now.
No, we did not. I mean, maybe we did, but I don't remember seeing it.
Even before we signed Onana, we said he wasn't going to resign. Or maybe it wasn't. Maybe United didn't announce. Maybe it was just like the story out there. But I remember the point where it became clear, where it was said that, like, because remember, like, even when his contract expired, they were still saying United is in negotiations with De Gea. And yeah, at some point, stopped hearing that. It just became, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think he deserved more in for how he left. I mean, he was probably the only guy on the team that had a Premiership title. Maybe he and Jones. At least a send-off or a testimonial game or something. I don't know. I just thought he deserved a little bit better from a send-off perspective. But in as to what we want, I'm happy that De Gea is gone. He's not in United anymore. And I wish him all the very best. If he can join Real Madrid, good for him. So now it's back to Onana. I think Onana, I think he'd be a good signing. I think he's probably one of the best goalies out there now on the ball. And I think he fits what ETH is trying to achieve. I think he fits what ETH is trying to achieve with being able to play from the back, being able to press, being able to read the game. I think he has very good qualities. He's commanding, he's vocal. Maguire can testify to that. He's serious. It looks like he's up for the challenge. And he's a modern day goalkeeper. I think if you look back to Champions League final, if not for the goal from Rodri, I think Onana was in contention to be the man of the match in that game because he played absolutely like he was immense. So from
if
that
not
standpoint,
for Lukaku's big head, they might have actually won that game too.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, I think he's a good goalie, but I'll just remind United fans that, you know, this is not a style that we're used to, and you should expect some high blood pressure, you know, for the next few months because Onana.
Is that a message to United fans or is that a message to you?
I was going to say
to who? No, I've accepted it myself. I've put it so many times in the group chat. Right? Yeah. So I'm just telling.
Sounds more like a prep talk to me.
No. I've prepped my mind already about it now. But I remember I said it in our group that Onana is going to give someone high BP, and you see some memes flying that Onana might be bored and just see Casemiro in DM and run into me with the team. Yo, Wagwan. You know, so a good example of that was the goal against Lons or whatever. Yeah, that team. Again, that's not Onana's fault, but yeah. I think against someone like De Gea, that probably wouldn't happen, right? Because the guy is probably going to be closer to his box 18. But that's the good and the bad. Onana is going to bring a lot of positives to the team.
Pepe, how you didn't even start Stones? Sorry, I was just looking at the starting lineup.
Yeah, Onana is going to bring a lot of positives to the team, but we should expect some risk that comes with that. And I'm looking forward to him for us, actually.
Yeah, no, I think my only issue with the high, I guess, the high line for Onana is because our back line, besides Martinez and maybe Varane to some extent, like, I don't really trust Dalot's passing, because that goal was because Dalot couldn't just pass like a 10-yard ball to Varane properly, right? So that's my only issue, is that, like, the people who are relying on to actually pass the ball properly in the back there might be a little bit shaky in terms of their ball handling. So
I think Dalot is a very good passer of the ball. That was just a mistake. I think that was a blip. He misjudged where Varane was going to In terms of passing, I think Dalot is probably exceptional at passing. It's a mistake that can happen in any game. It can happen to anyone. I think against Man City versus Arsenal, I think it was Ben White or Saliba made a similar mistake, or maybe it was Tomiyasu, and De Bruyne actually scored. It's just a lapse in judgment, and it could happen to anyone, actually.
That's a fair point. Let's move on to our new striker. Do we know what number he's actually going to get? Number 9?
17.
Okay. Tony Tony from France is still number 9.
Yeah, it took Pastor Fred's number.
Oh, okay. But any thoughts on, I guess I'll start with you on Maestro, on our new striker, number 17.
Yeah, I think, obviously, he's young, so... you can't put too much pressure on him right away.
Yeah, younger and inexperienced too as well.
But I think he matches a lot of what ETH wants in it. Again, when we talk about the style of play that ETH is looking for, you know, the thing that Hoyland has, you know, his profile, obviously he's big, he's tall, he's rapid. He has the ability to come to the ball, to be a target man, to be able to receive the ball, hold it up, and allow others to come into play. But he also has the ability to run in behind because he's so fast. So, you know, if we don't... I think we're building a team where we can now play either style you want to play. So if you want to press up and overcommit too many people, Onana can get... So if you even watch like some of our preseason games, Onana tries to send the ball to Rashford direct sometimes, but Rashford is not the kind of person that can hold up the ball, right? So there are a lot of those ones that they hit Rashford and they don't stick. They just kind of bounce off him, or the defender kind of pushes him and he loses control of the ball. If that's Hoyland, he's able to hold up that ball. And so now if you're a team that is, you want to press us from out the back, and Onana can actually like get that ball to Hoyland, he can shield the ball. One pass and it's Anthony or Rashford in behind. Or it can be one pass to Bruno and he's in behind that defender as well. So I think when you see what ETH is doing, he's trying to create a team where no matter how the other team wants to play us, we have an answer for. And I think that's something that we didn't have last season. So I don't know that, especially right away, I don't know that the thing he's going to offer us the most is goal scoring necessarily. But I think he's one of those people that will, again, just because he's in the team, we will actually get more goals because he will be in better areas. And we don't have wingers right now that are like crossing the ball into the box all the time. But one of the things that he's very good at from like his goals in Atalanta are like scoring in the near post. So making those runs right to the near post where you can cross the ball and he can get there before the defender does. So I think we'll see him score some goals. I don't expect him to, you know, if he cracks double digits, I think it'll be barely, maybe, you know, around that 10, 12, 15. Wow.
Yeah, Haaland. I know. I was going to say the same thing too. Someone said water is wet.
Into the new season.
So it was nothing new under the sun.
Wow. Anyway, I think, you know, when we talk about all the signings, like even with Onana, you think of last season, part of the reason why we had to be blasting the ball into midfield to someone like Vergost was because De Gea couldn't be trusted to pass out the back, right? And so teams could press us. We couldn't pass out the back, so now we have to go long. And if we go long, we're trying to win the second ball. A header that drops down, then Bruno can get into the spaces and win. Those kind of things. So I think with Mount, with Onana, with Haaland, like those are three areas where we've really made signings that will change the way we play in a huge way and give us more. Like, if you think of last season especially, like our home form was actually decent. Our away form was horrendous. And I think that's going to be different. Like the way teams could press us away where we would choke on the ball, like that's going to end. And now that transitional game that Francis was alluding to, that's going to be extremely potent when we now talk about our away form. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how all of this gels together.
No, that's a good point. I guess my only trepidation is he's 20, or how old is he? 21, if any.
20.
And he's already having back problems. I just don't know, especially for a very tall person like that. So I don't know. Anyways, but Francis, what are your thoughts on?
I don't know. I feel like that was exaggerated because nobody from the club has actually come out to say what the problem was. Like, it's a lot of speculation. He's training. He's just training alone, right?
And, well, isn't that the kind of thing that usually, like, will hold up, like, a transfer of such, you know, the amount of money we're talking about?
That's what I'm saying is, like, right now, we actually don't know why he's out. What ETH said, if I remember correctly, was that he picked up, like, an injury while he was training with Atlanta on preseason. And it's going to take him some time. But he's in training right now. He's just, like when I say training, he's training individually. So the way they said it is he just needs rest. And then he'll be back. So it's not like he's, you know, sitting down, immobile. He's actually on the training pitch. He's just not training with the players. And so for me, it's like, I don't know that it's actually a back problem, like a chronic back problem that he's going through. It might just be something else, because the club hasn't said that. And then if you remember too, like Rashford under Ole, who again, fuck Ole forever unfinished, Rashford had a broken back, like a crack in his spine, or what was it? It was some wild injury that Ole kept playing him through, and it took time for him to recover, but he just really needed like rest for him to be able to get to the point where he started feeling better. Penalty.
I'm a little bit behind. Penalty for who?
No, they didn't give it. I was just speculating.
Okay. Well, no, that's fair. Francis, do you agree with Larry's assessment of Haaland?
Yeah, I think so. I think ETH and the team, credit to them, they did their homework. It's seeing where we were deficient, and they didn't just go out to just buy a new striker. I think they tried to find a profile that fits or answers a lot of the questions that potential teams will pose to us throughout the season. And sounds like, or seems like Rasmus Højlund, whatever his name is.
Højlund.
Yeah, seems like the best fit that they came up with. So far I'm happy with the signing. I think El Maestro talked about the qualities, so I don't need to really touch on that anymore. But I think the one thing that stands out to me, especially from hearing him talk, is his mentality. And just seeing some of his previous like highlights and whatnot, his mentality from a vocal perspective and whatnot, as well as from a gameplay perspective, he's the kind of guy that is willing to take a knock and he'll get up and keep running. Like, he's maybe, I don't want to jump ahead, but I feel like he might be built for the Premiership just because of his physique as well, and you know, all the attributes that he has, plus that mental toughness of being able to get knocked down and get up again without, you know, having to complain and whatnot. And I think we need some of that. So is an exciting side signing. I think last season, and don't quote me on this, but in terms of creating chances, I think United was maybe top two or top three. But if you look at our goals scored, we were not even top five, right? So it just tells me that someone was missing those chances. And if you know, Højlund can put himself in those positions where, you know, these guys are creating a lot for him, I think he will score. I've seen a stat that in terms of chances taken or number of shots taken or something, that, you know, Højlund was up there last season, like I think even higher than Haaland in relation to the number of games he played. So one thing we don't want to do is put pressure on the guy. United is a kind of club that you need to be mentally strong to be able to succeed there, right? it's one thing to just
say play. The pressure is inevitable, man, if you play United.
It's one thing to play in Premier League, but it's another thing to play in Premier League and play for Manchester United, because if you're not strong enough, it would be like quicksand and United will swallow you. So I hope he's mentally tough enough to
pause. I don't think there'll be as much, like, a lot of pressure on him unless he's extremely underwhelming. And even for him to be underwhelming, I think it takes a certain type of, like, he almost has to not look the part, you know? Like he's, you know, like when Francis would make fun of Lukaku, for example, where Lukaku just never looked the part. Whether that was physically, where he looked like he was bigger than he needed to be sometimes, or his touch was bad, you know, just looking the part of a striker that, you know, that looks coordinated and can finish. The other thing I think with Højlund too that we haven't maybe talked about is, I suspect that one of the reasons why ETH got him is because he's young enough that he can mold him into the type of player that he wants, right? Like almost any striker that you get, that, like, if you're getting Harry Kane, you are getting a finished good that is better than Højlund, to be sure, but you are going to have to make some compromises to the way that you play because you are signing him because of who he is. And so he's less likely to adapt to some of the things that you're going to tell him. Like someone like Højlund, for example, if ETH tells him, you need to press and keep pressing and you need to, like, run, you know, like, I show you the video, you're not running here, you have to, there's no question about, like, oh, I can't do it or I'm too big for this. No, you haven't done anything yet. So I think that's one of the things that he's looking at is, like, okay, I see the tools, I trust myself to be able to mold this guy. And if I'm going to be here for the next 5 years, for example, it's like, who is this guy in 5 years when I've had my time to be able to, like, you know, work with him for that period of time? Like, who is he going to be at 25 when he's actually now the guy that we expect him to be, right? So I think there's some of that there as well. But even this season, I still expect him to do well. I think Martial is obviously going to get some moments, you know, but we can't trust him to stay healthy. I don't think Rashford wants to play in strike, but with the form that Garnacho has shown early on, I think we can expect that Rashford is also going to play in strike so that ETH can get both of those guys in the team at the same time. So we'll probably see, like, those three splits, you know, that striker position evenly over the course of the season.
Yeah, I guess to piggyback off of what Francis is saying, like, what you're saying, it sounds like it's a project for ETH, right? And I guess the problem would that then be, like, the patience from the fans, because I don't know if the fans want to see through another project.
All we know is project, man.
But that's my point, though.
I feel like when you think about where we were under Ralf Rangnick to last season, this is probably, you know, this group aside, this I feel would probably be the most optimistic that United fans have been in a while. You know, I don't know that a lot of my United friends are super optimistic all the time, but for me anyway, this is the most optimistic I've been in a very long time. Because we have a style of play. We can see that the style of play is progressing. It looks like it's going to be entertaining. And then we're making signings that are going to feed that style of play. Like, obviously, Fred is about to leave. Maguire is about to leave, fingers crossed. We're going to replace them with other defenders that are better suited to the style that we're going to play. We're probably going to get another midfielder, maybe Amrabat. So then you start thinking, okay, you have a midfield where potentially, you have Amrabat and Casemiro as your six. You have Mount and Eriksen. You have Bruno and probably maybe Sancho, let's say, because Sancho looks like he's going to play centrally. And then you have Martial and Højlund. You have Garnacho and Rashford. You have Anthony and Amado. So, like,
you're forgetting Mino.
Oh, shit, Mino. My boy, Yeah. MK. So like, you know, you begin to like, you're beginning to see the makings of like a team, right? And I think that's the thing Ten Hag is trying to do. He's trying to build a squad of players where they're too deep in every position, and then building that style of play. And it's going to take a little bit of time for everybody to know the role. But again, if you look at this team in a year, even now, even this season, it's like you can see the avenue for the team to get better, you know. So that's where I think it's, at least I'm the most optimistic I've been at any point.
Yeah, so we can just jump to like how we see the team playing. I think we've all kind of touched on how we see ETH playing this season, from us getting Onana because you want a more ball playing goalie, from missing Mount because you want someone who's better in transition than the previous person we had in there, which was Eriksen and Fred, and who else played that role? I think Bruno also played that role at some point last season. So we know we want to play a little bit more transition. We want to also press forward, and that's one of the reasons why you get someone with this kind of speed of Oiland. So, but besides that, is there anything else you guys think is going to change in terms of our start from play from last season to this season?
Sorry, Jimmy, can you ask your question again? I got sidetracked there.
So I'm saying, like, we've kind of all touched on how we see ETH playing, especially with the new signings. You have Onana because you want a ball-playing goalie, a guy who can distribute the ball better than the previous person, right? So yeah. Basically, you're having, like, an extra defender in there. So that means your team can also push up because you have someone like that. And then you have someone like Mount, who's supposed to be better for the team in transition, right? Sure. He might not be the most skilled person, but again, it's all leading towards faster play, getting the ball from defense to attack in less touches, right? And then you have someone like Hoyland when he comes back, who is supposed to be very fast too. So again, that lends to a transition team is what I'm seeing from the signings we've gotten. Is there anything else you guys think we're gonna add to, or ETH is gonna add to the style of play besides those things, points I've mentioned?
No, I think it's going to be a combination of transition and being able to control the game better, like playing from the back. And if the team is in a low block, then we would have to find, you know, holes within the team by moving them around and then creating chances for ourselves. So I think it's going to be a combination of all of that, and then a little bit more solidity. And by solidity, I don't think it's more from a being able to defend, but being able to just control the game. So like holding the ball more, and the more we hold the ball, the less the other team has the ball too. So I think there will be improvement in the team overall. I just hope that there's more consistency from the team, and that the new players that we bought can gel quicker than we expect. So that would be the hope this season.
Before we move on to the game, Maestro, I actually want to ask you a question. One of the issues that I think we discussed in this pod a couple of times last season is the fact that we are not press resilient in terms of when they press us, we tend to lose the ball easily. I don't think we've actually really fixed that. We added Mount to the midfield. What are your thoughts on, you know, how the signings might actually help us improve that aspect of things? Because I think that's one of the issues that I think we've definitely improved that.
Because again, I don't. So when we talk
because
about
I guess so. Typically, if Mount is not playing, it would be Eriksen or it would be Fred. Like the other guys, I said the guys from last season. I don't think Bruno is press resistant.
Yeah, but I think there are levels to being press resistant, right? Like, so again, if we talk about like the ball just coming out from the back, it starts with our defensive line, right? So we have Onana, which creates an imbalance for the other team. So if they are pressing us with three players, for example, say they're playing 4-3-3 again, and they're pressing our defenders. Now, Onana has the ball. They have to make a decision about who they press because he can go direct into midfield. And we're not trying to play the kind of football that City is playing in the sense that we're only trying to possess the ball to possess the ball. We are trying to get, like you said, we're trying to get the ball from point A to point B So if you overcommit in front, it means that there are spaces in behind. Who Bruno is for us, for example, in this team, is somebody that is always looking to create a chance and create a chance very quickly. And you can say that's his gift and his fault at the same time, is that he never wants to hold the ball for too long. He wants to like see the pass that is going to lead to a chance, you know, right away. So for me, I think it makes a difference, because while Mount might not be the most press-resistant player, he is one of the best at progressive passes from midfield into attack. And again, so when we talk about that transitional play, Mount is not necessarily going to be the person that is dropping in to come and get the ball, because the person that you're worried about for press resistance is the person that is starting the attacks, right? So if the keeper is passing to, like, say, Casemiro, for example, what you're now saying is, okay, can Casemiro, if he's being pressured, get the ball out of his feet and, you know, into, like, get past the press and then be able to pass to somebody else? But I don't think that's how we are going to play, I guess is what I'm saying. I think with Onana, with Martinez especially, because last season we didn't really notice the failings of that style until Martinez wasn't available anymore. And then it became really tough for De Gea, because De Gea couldn't really give the ball to Varane. Yeah, and then you're looking at Casemiro. Casemiro too is the same. But now it's like you have Shaw, you have Dalot, you have Martinez. So where Casemiro would be before is where Martinez is now going to be, because Onana is going to push up the pitch. So Martinez is actually the first outlet now. And so again, that's why I'm saying, like, teams are going to have to start making different decisions as to who they press, because the people that are going to have to be press resistant are the people that are going to actually be able to do it. Like Martinez is press resistant. You can get the ball to Shaw on the wings. You can get the ball to Dalot. Casemiro less so, but he can still like do something. So for me, it's like that's going to make a huge difference. If Martinez is getting the ball in midfield, that means Casemiro is further up. That means Bruno is further up. That means Mount is further up. Now, again, the downside to that is if they lose the ball, now you are in serious trouble, because you are going to concede. But if you are practicing this over and over again, then the chances that you'll be able to...
KDB is injured.
Yeah. I think he might be out. But the chances that you'll be able to play through it are higher. And so for me, that means that you'll be able to get... you'll be able to actually play out of the press much better than you were last season.
That's fair. That's a fair point. I just don't see how we've really improved that area, because if I'm City, all I can do is just not, I'll press everybody else and let you give the ball to Varane or give the ball to Casemiro.
but think about the Man City versus Inter Milan final, right? Why couldn't City do that against Inter Milan? Because when they came and they started pressing everybody man for man, Onana would just play that ball to Dzeko. Dzeko would control the ball, give the ball to, what's that Argentine guy's name now? Lisandro Martinez. And then Inter Milan were always off to the races. That's why you noticed Onana so much in that game. And that's what I'm saying, is like those are some of the solutions to the problems. Is if you decide that you are going to press, you are going to commit four players to get the ball, to press our defenders, then that means that there are more people in midfield that are going to be open, and Onana is in a position where he can actually get the ball directly to those players. If you don't press all the players available, then he can either get the ball to the wing or get the ball directly to Casemiro, right? Even if they say, okay, we're going to mark Martinez, we're not going to let you pass to Martinez. It's like, okay, now Varane can stand next to Onana, and he can get the ball in a position where you are not going to be able to press him either. So I guess we'll see. As the season progresses, you'll see what I mean. So will you be able to get a better sense of how the play looks?
So our next game is on, well, I guess our next game, our first game of the season is home to Wolves. I think...
They just lost their manager.
Oh, yeah, that's true. They fired him before the season started.
Mutual.
But like you said, I think we talked about our home. Was it our home record that was good last season? Was it our away record that was good? I can't remember which one it was. I know we were home record was good. Yeah, so yeah, we're hoping to continue. Yeah, we're hoping to continue in that track. It's a 1 p.m. start, but again, it's preseason. I really don't have anything. I think we can go straight to our starting lineups. And then what after we give our starting lineup, we'll do predictions for line. Then I want to just end it with what our season prediction is in terms of like who finishes top four or top five in the Premier League. But I'll go first in terms of my starting lineup. Onana in goal is Wolves. So I'll go Dalo, Varane, Martinez, Shaw, Casemiro, Mount, Bruno, Rashford. Anthony hasn't even played any preseason game. I don't even know if it's...
Anthony has played multiple
preseason
games.
No, 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 no. I meant Tony.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Please call him Marshall.
That's... I'm saying he hasn't played. I don't even know. Yeah, but I don't know what that. What does that mean, though? Like,
he's not. He's not
we
ready.
We don't even know what was wrong with him. Malaki is to be out for a little bit, apparently.
Yeah. So yeah. Maybe I'll put Sancho up front and then Anthony, Francis.
Man, it feels so good to not say pussy in goal, eh?
Yeah. It would have been funny if you had actually said that.
Yeah, I'll start with the strong man in goal. Dalo, Varane, Martinez, Luke Shaw, Casemiro, Bruno, Mount, Rashford, Garnacho, Anthony.
Wait, did you say your front three? Oh, Garnacho. Okay, I see what you mean. Yeah, okay. El Maestro.
So for me, I'm going to go Onana in goal. Refreshing to see a leader in our post now. Onana in goal. Varane, Martinez, Dalo or Wan-Bissaka, man. Dalo made a mistake in the last game. I don't know. I'm going to go Dalo. I don't have too much conviction about that, though. I'm going to go Dalo, Shaw, in midfield, Bruno, Mount, and Casemiro. In attack, Rashford, Garnacho, and Anthony.
Okay, we'll go straight to predictions. I will go 2-1 to United at home. Francis?
3-1 to United.
Wow, starting off strong. El Maestro?
Surprise. 3-0 to United. They're not considering anything. I think our defense is underrated, eh?
I don't know. I think we just...
Why do you say our defense is underrated?
Because we... Like, if you think about our defense has actually been really good. Like, last
season... In preseason
season,
or last
right?
season?
No, just in general. Yeah, like, in games that matter, right? So...
Yeah, but I think this season and preseason we've considered in almost every game.
I don't count preseason because again preseason you're working on different things, right? Like your coach might be coming into the preseason game saying, "Okay, today we are going to work on only passing out this way," because you're training and then you're like using the games to be able to reflect some of the things you are training, but you might not be playing like a full game, you know what?
Or your starting lineup is based on what you've seen in preseason, right? With who have started. I think you need to take a bit of input from preseason and carry that on into the first game of the season. After the first three games, you can.
For preseason, the things that you work on are not necessarily the same things. Like in a preseason game, ETH might be telling them these are the four things that we want to work out from a defensive standpoint because we've been practicing it in versus like in a game, you're now telling them, okay, everything is on the table now. Like just play. Right. So for me, I'm looking at more from last season as well. When I say our defense is strong, it's not just preseason. Like there's nobody in our defense other than Onana that is new in terms of.
And that's a huge difference, right? So you can look at yours that way, but the way I look at mine is based on recent history and the information that I've seen most recently.
So what are you saying? Like, are you saying that our defense is not strong?
No, I'm saying there's a tendency to just concede a stupid goal, and that's what we've done all preseason, and we just cannot. I don't see how we're just going to change that because of the first game in the season. Ask me this question again after three games, and obviously my answer will be different.
We're not conceding our first three games. Let me tell you.
And that's your yeah. Whatever. That's fine. I'm
your
just,
opinion.
Yeah, your opinion, I should say. I'm just giving you my own opinion based on how I look at it.
Yeah, I think we had one of the strongest defenses in the league. Again, up until Martinez got injured, for sure. Because we barely scored goals anyway, so we still finished third or whatever we finished last season. So, for me, I think with the addition of Onana now, especially with somebody that is going to coordinate defense, with the hopefully removal of Harry Maguire, and with that, he's not our captain anymore. There's no questions there. The back four is going to be relatively settled. I think you're going to see a much better defense this season from us. Oh, man, anyway.
Okay. Let's wrap today's episode up with our top four, I guess, if you want to include top five, is going to be for the season. I'm going to try and write all this down so we remember who said what. Anyways, Francis, you want to start us off with what your top four or five for the season is going to be in the Premier League?
Sure. This season, I think Arsenal has gotten or will get stronger. Their signings have been good. They've plugged in a few holes, and what I think led to their downfall last season. The mentality aspect is yet to be seen, but I'm just going based off of the signings they've made this season. I'm putting Arsenal up there to win the title this season. Second will be, and this is not taking anything away from City, I think what City achieved last season was incredible with the treble.
Oh, wait, they're saying Arsenal is going to win.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Oh, sorry, I didn't know. You didn't say what order you were doing it in now. I didn't know you said one. Okay, wow. I thought that Arsenal was definitely your list. Wow.
Now I'm starting from top to bottom. Arsenal, then City, what they achieved last season, as I was saying, was incredible. I just think there will be a hangover from them, just from a, can we do this again? From that kind of standpoint. I see them being challenged. I also think that they've lost a few key players in Mahrez and Gundogan, who contributed a lot to their goals. So right now, I'm not... Obviously, City, their goals come from a lot of places, but I think right now they have mostly Haaland and maybe De Bruyne that would be their main source of goals. So if they replace them before...
They have Grealish, though, and Foden.
Yeah,
Foden.
Grealish is not really a scorer, though.
Fair enough. Right?
Yeah, so if they do replace them in the transfer window, I'm sure we'll reevaluate, but this is just based off of what all the teams have done today. But yeah, I have City finishing second. Third is going to be, I think, Manchester United. And if we finish third, I still see it as progression, just because we did not sign only three players, but we signed three players in three positions for us, and it's going to take at least a year for them to blend in. So I'm using this year as well as a blending in phase for some of the new acquisitions that we had. So I'm putting United in third, and my fourth position is the tough one. I've not really decided on or settled on who I think is going to be in that position. It's between Liverpool, Chelsea, and what's the other team that I had? Tottenham.
Probably Newcastle.
No, Tottenham. But with Tottenham losing Kane, I think they're not totally out of it. So it's between Liverpool and Chelsea. And right now, if I was to bet on it, I'd probably go with Liverpool. So, yeah, I think that's my top four. Arsenal, City, Man U, Liverpool.
Okay, I'll go next. My rule is defending champs always get the top mark. So until someone beats them, City is the winner of the league to me. As much as I agree with you that Arsenal has actually like made a few good signings, I just think at the same time, these Arsenal players are young and you can't really count on progress being, you know, linear in terms of like, oh, okay, because they were second last season and they've added so and so, you know, some of them might drop off. You never know. But anyways, City is number one for me. Arsenal is second, United third.
Haaland again.
And they always, again, City has Haaland still. So regardless of who they've lost. And then fourth is a little bit tricky. It's between Chelsea and Liverpool for me. And the reason why I'm thinking Chelsea is number one, Chelsea has no distractions in terms of they're not in any of the...
I guess Liverpool is in...
Yeah, they have Thursday night games, which is not beans.
So who's Chelsea. Second for you?
Sorry, what's it?
Who's second for you?
Arsenal.
Oh, and then who? United third?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then I'll go Chelsea and Liverpool will be fifth. That's my top five. Landry.
I'm going to go fourth to first. I'm not going to do one, two, four. So fourth for me is going to be Arsenal. I don't buy what you guys are saying. I don't think Arsenal is better than they were last season. I don't see where it is. Like, I think Rice is good, but you still have Partey, so I don't know what position Rice is going to play. And I just don't... Again, you're going to be playing Champions League. Are you going to have the squad? Like, they were able to get through a lot last season because they were not playing in multiple competitions. Now that you're playing...
No, they were, though.
Yeah, but Europa, they could afford to play like a team that didn't matter. You can't do that with Champions League, right? So, for me, it's like... It's going to be more tasking on them this season. And I don't know that they are built for it yet. Like last season, the way they started, they caught a lot of people off guard. They won their first X amount of games. The second part of the season, it wasn't as impressive. So for me, I know there are some people on this board that think Arsenal played the best football and all that trash. We can Arsenal to win the league. My God. I've kind of struggled with third because I don't know if it's Chelsea or Liverpool as well, but I just think Chelsea, I think they'll be better than last season, but I don't see... I think it also depends on who they get, right? They've signed a lot of people. Who is actually going to play for them? Like someone like Caicedo makes a huge difference. If you have a midfield of Caicedo and Enzo, that makes Enzo a huge difference. Is that what did I say?
Yeah, that's what you said.
Yeah, we're just agreeing with you
that, you know,
Caicedo and Enzo.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so Caicedo and Enzo, I think that makes a huge difference. So I'm leaning towards... I'm going to say Liverpool just because I think they might still be able to get a few players in, but I'm not strong on that one at all, to be very honest. The other second I'm going to say is City. I think they've... obviously, like, lost Gundogan, like Francis mentioned, and they've lost Mahrez. And I think especially Mahrez.
I know where this is going.
Of course. Come on now. You think I'm just a nigga that's picking ass now? Can you fucking imagine? Anyway, let me not even get into that.
Yo,
how nice,
man. Yo.
I think, you know, the loss of Mahrez especially, because Mahrez offered them something that nobody else on the team does. That, like, unpredictability. I don't think there's anybody on the team that offers that. You know, we just saw De Bruyne get injured. So, obviously, this is Burnley at home, and Burnley supposedly a decent team. But I don't know that City is going to have the energy or the same... I just think some of the changes that are being made in the team is going to be hard to replace. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. So, I'm going to go City second. And then first, I mean, Do I even need to say this? But, you know, I mean, some things need to be said. But what's understood and has to be explained. I think United wins the Premier League this season. I think we have the ability to play every style of football that is necessary. I would still like us to get someone like Amrabat. I think if we get... So for me, I always said, if we got Harry Kane, foregone conclusion for me that we're going to win the league. To be very honest, like, because City didn't do anything. Some of the other teams, they improved, but not in ways that, like, I thought would be enough. But for me, I think if we can get Amrabat and we have, like two in every position where we have, like, Amrabat and Casemiro, our defense is solid. Our attack, you know, still some questions. But if we're not conceding, if we're creating chances with the home form, yeah. I see us, like, really taking a huge step forward this season and getting a very good early run of form and then building on that towards, you know, through the whole season. So for me, United is going to be that surprise team for a lot of people, and we're going to end up winning the Premier League.
So I guess, I'll just have one question for you. Like, so you think our signings is enough to make up the almost 20-point gap that I had last season?
I don't think it's about the signings necessarily. I think the Premier League is not going to be as strong as it was. Right? Like, even when you look at last season...
What do you mean as strong as it was?
I don't think the top teams are going to be as strong as... And when I even say strong, strong is relative. Because again, to me, Arsenal is not a better team than United. I know Francis feels differently about this. Clearly, he said they will win the Premier League. To me, Arsenal is not a better team. I think they had good momentum to start the season last season, right?
So
they had
signings. Were they a better team last season?
Yes, I'd say, like, especially early on, they were a better team last season. But to me, again, you have to look at the amount of games that we played. We played in four competitions all the way to the end of all, well, with the exception of Europa, right? We made it to the final of the FA Cup, of the Carabao Cup. We made it far in the Europa League. We also played in the Premier League, and a lot of our players also played internationally as well. So there was no respite. There was no rest. We didn't have any squad depth. Our striker was Vegas. Like, there were things like this that, like, Martinez we lost. You know, like, you start looking at some of the players that we lost as well, along with the schedule that we had. If Arsenal played the kind of schedule that we had, they would not be where we were. So for me, the results are one thing. I can't argue with the results. So I can't say that, like, they did not deserve to be second. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying you put the same conditions that you put on us on them, they would have fumbled or they would have crumbled a lot earlier. This is what I believe. So for me, I look at United as a better team. And then we signed players that make more sense to me for what we need than Arsenal is. Arsenal is signing David Raya, is signing Havertz. I think Timber will be good for them. But where is Timber really going to play? Right back wasn't...
Explain Zinchenko's position.
But that's my point. So, like...
He's not an upgrade
from Zinchenko. What? You can't say somebody that played in Ajax, that is coming from Ajax, that never played in the Premier League, is going to be an upgrade on somebody that has actually played for City and played for Arsenal.
Yeah,
and
but well for Arsenal. Anyways, we can discuss
so
it later.
Those are like semantics in terms of the argument.
Yeah, I get that's why I didn't want to go into argument with that. Yeah,
I'm looking at City and saying I don't think City is going to be as strong. So then, if City were the champions, I think you are looking at who from the rest of the pack can cover the distance. Arsenal is not going to surprise anyone anymore, and they are playing in Champions League, so they are not going to be able to rotate their team as easily as they did previously. So for me, it's United.
Okay. All right.
So just a recap. El Maestro, United, City, Liverpool, Arsenal.
Yeah.
Francis, Arsenal, City, United, Liverpool, right?
Yep.
Jimmy, what was the other game?
City, Arsenal, United, Chelsea.
I think Chelsea is a good shot, man. I think Arteta will really make a difference, man.
So, we'll see how that goes. I put it in a group. Everyone can style a message if they want to, but I already have it saved somewhere. Well, anyways, it's a nice, good fresh pod pack for the season. Hopefully, we are talking more about wins this season than we did last season, and a little bit more, less frustrated than we were with some of our players last season, especially with the likes of Fred going and Dagia going. And at least we have a proper striker once he's healthy now. So hopefully, it's not a 2020 situation where he plays one game and is injured the next. Knock on wood. But on that note, brings us to the end of today's episode. Thank you all for listening. Please give us a follow on socials at What Will Fergie Do on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Threads coming soon. And rate and review us. 5 stars only. Anything less than 5 stars.
Keep it to yourself.
Y'all know the vibe.